Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, and we're talking about gymnastics to begin the show today. Really pleased to have KJ Wheeler with us. She's the head coach of UW Stout's gymnastics team. Coach Wheeler, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's exciting to be here.
Well, it's great to have you here, and it's great to have Anna Melke with us as well. She's a sophomore on UW Stout's gymnastics team. Anna competes in vault, bars, beams, and floor, so she's busy out there. Anna, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
So as we talk with our two guests today, I hope you'll join in. Maybe you want to know something about the different events in gymnastics. Maybe you know a young person who's just getting started in the sport, or maybe you have one that's already in it and you have some comments about the experience. The number to call, 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us the email address ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Coach Wheeler, let's start with you for a minute. You just got back from the National Collegiate Gymnastics Association National Championship, and the team finished fifth, which is great. What are the goals for you as a coach when you enter a season with your team?
Oh my gosh, there's so many goals. We sit down as a team and we write down. We had like a poster, and I just happened to have highlighters, so our goals were kind of in neon this year. And we just wrote down all the goals that we had. And I think leading a team is about incorporating your goals mine as a coach, but also what they feel passionate about and what they want to pursue and what they want to chase. And so you can never really set the goals higher than your athletes are willing to work for. So going in this year, our main goal was to get back to the national championship. It was going to be the first time a UW Stout gymnastics team had ever done like back-to-back years as a team to qualify. And so we wanted to start there and see how high we could go.
Well, I tell you what, Anna Melke was certainly a great addition to your team. She's an All-American honors this year. How did you get started in gymnastics, Anna?
I started when I think I was seven. I was like many other gymnasts doing flips on the trampoline and in my basement. And my mom decided that we should probably put her in a safer environment to do those things. And so, I loved it, and just community ed classes, and it just ramped up from there.
And how did you wind up at Stout?
I was a high school gymnast in Minnesota, and my senior year, Coach KJ had actually seen my vault from state, and she had reached out and offered me a visit. And so I thought, why not? And I came on the visit, and I really liked the coaching staff and the environment, as well as the polytechnic aspect that Stout has to offer within its education.
Yeah.
And I wanted the opportunity to do gymnastics for another 4 years. So I said yes.
And if I'm not mistaken, you scored a 9.75 on your vault in the Nationals, which is you could hardly get it much higher. I mean, 10 is the top, isn't it?
So yeah.
9.75 is an amazing amazing figure, and you were one of the four athletes from the team who earned All-American honors. What does that award mean to you and the work you put into it?
Yeah, I think it really reflects a long season of growth. The All-American really comes down to how you do at Nationals. It's the top eight at Nationals get those honors, and so throughout the season, just working on consistency and being able to put big numbers up meet after meet, and really trusting in my capabilities and doing what I practice in the meet and just doing it every day.
Well, it's an amazing thing. And Coach Wheeler, this is a Division III college, and your ability to recruit is, I mean, you can recruit whoever you want and so forth, but it's probably a challenging one because it's not scholarship oriented. I can tell you, my daughter goes to a Division III college and she runs cross country in the fall and she high jumps for the track team in the spring. So I have, and she's a junior this year. So I have quite a good idea of what goes into all of it. But talk about your role as a coach in a Division III institution.
I think the recruiting is totally different here than recruiting for a Division I team. And then I would also say the student athlete experience is really different too. So when you look at the product, like Anna's amazing vault, which by the way is actually start value is a 995. So she only 0.2 was taken off her score. Right. So you have this athlete who's doing this amazing vault. That vault is done at Division I colleges and universities all over. Like it will be competed this coming weekend at regionals. It will be the most common vault competed anywhere. Right. So she has this vault that is a Division I skill, a Division I routine, really. And she's not alone. Like many other people at the Division III championship did that same vault. And so it's really amazing when you think about what they do and the skills and the peak of athleticism that they achieve with also a lot of them work to pay for their schooling. Their schooling always comes first. And I think that, I'm not sure, maybe D1 wants to say that schooling comes first, but really here it does. Like you cannot miss school to come to, you miss practice because you have classes and that kind of thing. The only thing that's really an excused absence is if we're traveling away to a competition, they might miss like an afternoon class or something. So we're always putting school first. They're paying for their education really out of pocket. A lot of them also hold down jobs. The polytechnic experience Anna alluded to is like just hands-on learning is the thing. So they spend a ton of time in labs and in classrooms on UW-Stout campus, just really involved in their education. And then, there's students and they're college students. And so they have social networks and social gatherings and clubs and like, I know intramural volleyball just started, so a few of them are like coming in with their volleyball bruises from being on their intramural teams and all the things. So what they're doing is really incredible. And I think that's what, when I talk to athletes and so many of them have skills, could go D1, but also are considering D3. And we're looking for those athletes who want that like really well-balanced, well-rounded college experience where you're going to be valued as an athlete. You're going to be valued as a student, and you're going to be valued as a human who has a social life and who has extracurricular activities and a job and all those things. So I really, when recruiting, I think I just stress the balance of all those things that you get. And I think that's something that is special about D3 and compared to D1 athletics.
Yeah, I would agree with that. What's it like for you, Anna?
It's a big balancing act for sure, like KJ mentioned. I do have a job outside, so I I got a job actually through one of my classes. We had worked with them. That's part of the Polytechnic. We had worked with them through one of my marketing classes, kind of a small business in town. And after the class was over, they offered me a position. So I get to, put in a couple hours a week there. And then with school and practice, it's this balancing act of things that are so incredibly important to my coaches and myself and my teammates. And we're always celebrating each other's academic and athletic accomplishments, in and out of the gym. And it can be a lot for sure at times, but having someone who really values all those aspects of your life in a coach is really important. And I think it sets me up really well for my future because, in 2 years, I won't be a gymnast anymore. And it is important to focus on social life and career opportunities. And so balancing all of those is really great.
Gone through that whole process myself with my with my daughter, who's although she's never going to be an All-American in her sports, she still competes well and has that same sort of mix of activities and jobs and trying to really do it all. We got an email from someone who wants to know, what helps you perform well under pressure?
This is probably the hardest part of gymnastics, and that's a great question. I think this year I really started to figure it out, and that is practicing like I'm under pressure and practicing with the same intent and the same drive that I would in competition, right? So whether that's visualizing the vault runway at nationals or trying to hear the crowd screaming before you're vaulting, even if it's on a random Tuesday that I just finished a final and now I'm tired, like whatever it is, it's practicing with intent and purpose like you're at a meet. Because if you practice with the same intent that you would compete with, then when you get up to compete, it's like, I've done this 100 times already this week, and this is no different.
I've watched, this is just for me here, I've watched on TV the gymnastics events, and I often wondered, if somebody is just starting a vault or starting something, and then there's another event going on, and somebody cheers or hollers just as somebody's starting a vault, perhaps. Have you ever had that experience? I mean, you got to...
Right. It's a lot of tunnel vision, for sure. You have to, like, really learn to lock in. I think at regionals this year, we were in a smaller gym, and there's four events going with four different teams. And especially on our last rotation, we were on floor, and it was just so loud, and things were happening all around. But just locking into your routine and then also your team, because there's only one person competing at a time, mm-hmm. but you have 21 other people standing on the sideline, 100% invested in your routine. And so when you kind of have that moment of like, wow, there's so much happening right now, you can always look to them and they're locked in on you. They're cheering for you. They're being loud for you. And so really falling back on your teammates in a moment like that is super important. And that's kind of what helps with that.
Yeah, it sounds like a great way to do it. Coach Wheeler, how do you approach this mental aspect with your, or I don't know if you can teach it, or how do you instill that sort of thing in your team?
I think we approach the mental part of gymnastics like another event or like a skill on an event, right? And so it's really something you have to practice and you have to do over and over again. And these athletes are so high level physically, and they come in with all these skills, and they've done drills for them, right, their whole life, right? You can't just like start flipping over a vault and twisting off it. You start with like the run and the round off, and all these parts are drilled and they've done them many, many times, so that they really don't think about every aspect of it. They let their bodies kind of take over and take control. And so a big part of, succeeding in college gymnastics is training that mental aspect. Like that's our fifth event, is the mental event. So how do you approach this? How do you talk to yourself in your mind? How do you keep on your same script? And it takes practice. So we have like a script in our heads that we go through. Every athlete has their own script, and we practice it. First, they just develop it, so it's the same over and over. And then it's like you even practice walking up to the chalk tray, getting your chalk on, like the words in your head. And a lot of it's their own script, but we also kind of try to direct it, and it's very positive. It's very like building confidence. And it's also very much, like Anna was mentioning, this is your normal, right? You don't want to walk up there and be like, I need a miracle right now. You're going to flip over a vault. You want it to feel exactly like you felt so many times before, right? Like you want to be calm and confident and just know what's going on and be in control of it. And so there's that aspect too, is like you want to hit you want to do your very best at this really big, important meet like nationals. But there's also this moment where you have to take and be able to just like block out all the noise. It's just background noise in there, and just say like, I have done this balance beam routine 100 times exactly the way I'm going to do it now. And so you let it flow like exactly that, you know. In a way, I think gymnasts are sometimes some of the most disciplined athletes in that way.
Yeah.
Because what they do, like Anna said, on a random Tuesday afternoon, they got in a fight with their boyfriend. Their car wouldn't start. So they came in like huffing and puffing 2 minutes before practice started. And they kind of bombed an exam earlier that day. And they still have to come in, lock it down, and be like, I'm going to do this exact vault the same way I have done it, you know, 100 times before, and we'll do it 100 times after. So I think mentally there's some of just the most disciplined athletes because of that, you know, what their sport demands in that way.
And I've got another question about that, but I also need to remind everybody here that we are talking with Coach KJ Wheeler, head coach at UW Stout's gymnastic team, and Anna Mielke, who is a sophomore at UW Stout's gymnastics team. She competes in vault, bars, beams, and floor, and she is an All-American, won All-American honors this year for UW Stout and for her team and for herself. Questions or comments or maybe an experience of your own to share, I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us the email address ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Jill Nadeau is our producer today, Sarah Hopeful, our technical director. I'm Larry Mueller for Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network as we talk about the UW Stout's gymnastics team. Reflecting on the season's success, national, they were placed fifth in the nationals this year, a heck of an achievement. And again, join in, questions, the number 800-642-1234, email to ideas@wpr.org. So just going back to the conversation and getting ready and training and so forth. So Anna, it's not something you, when you get to the line to do your vault or whatever, you don't run that through your head how your body's going to twist or turn. It's already there?
Kind of. As KJ was saying with the script, I have certain words that I repeat in my head at each part of the vault to kind of, they're key words to help me get in the right positions. But, I mean, a vault takes like a couple seconds to do. And so you can't be thinking like, all right, now I need to put my hands here and my like body here. And so training these keywords kind of as like cue points that when you say like this one word, your body knows to like this muscle does this and this. And so it connects all of it together in a really like synthesized just keyword. And vault's a little bit different like that because it is so much quicker. On floor, when I compete, floor, I get to just kind of like let loose and have fun. And there's a lot of like dancing and I can look around and engage with the crowd and my teammates. And then when it comes to the passes, those same keywords, just to really set your mind in that same spot it always is.
It's fun to watch all of it. At least I really enjoy watching all of it. I watch in disbelief a lot of the time how an athlete can perform the kinds of things that you do or your teammates do, how they stand on that balance beam, even just to get up on it and stand on it is an amazing feat as far as I'm concerned, Coach Wheeler.
I don't disagree. I stay firmly on the ground all my days now.
But you had a lot. But you, as in your earlier years, you were, I'm sure, a gymnast as well.
Yeah, I was a gymnast. I was kind of a fraidy cat. I think I was always cut out to be a coach.
So let's talk about the competitions themselves. Of course, there you're alone when you're out there competing, but it. In college, it's a team sport, right, Coach Wheeler? How's it set up?
Yeah. So I mean, you've seen, most of the audience has seen gymnastics, right? And so there's just one person going on the event at a time. But in college, our whole goal is this, like, is the team goal of it, right? And so things like Anna's All-American in vault, we love that. We're so proud of her. She's actually, I keep wanting to, like, throw in, she's actually our only back-to-back All-American. So,
right.
Like, 2 years in a row, she got All-American on vault, and that's just an incredible feat, like, in her freshman and sophomore year. But we love that. We're proud of her. We pretty much never talk about that during the years. We talk about what that score and what we can do for the team and how we can have the most people possible be getting that quality of performance when it counts, you know, and that's true on every event. So we're 6 routines go on every event. We show our top 6 routines and we can drop 1 score per event. So we're showing 24 and we're counting 20 scores. So really the total is like out of 200. Now, no team has ever gotten a 200. It's not like we're aiming for that, right? But I think gymnasts always, they just strive to be better and push themselves. So it's kind of it's a delicate balance between strive for excellence versus strive for perfection, right? So.
So, and how many teammates?
This year we had 22 on the team.
Wow. And they all compete at one point or another?
Yes, they all get in the lineup. So we're lucky in college gymnastics. You have those 6 lineup spots. And then for most of the regular season meets, we have 2 exhibition spots. So those are routines that they get scored like normal. They just can't count towards the team score. But it's a really good place to get people newer to the lineup, some experience, or just make sure. I mean, if you're training 6 days a week for the whole year and you never get to do 1 competitive routine, that's rough, right? So it's a good place to, like, keep people learning and growing and get them practice competing without sort of risking your team score.
Someone called and then couldn't stay with us, but wondering why in many schools, or some schools at least, have dropped gymnastics. And what's the reason, do you think? I mean, certainly it's alive and well at Stoud.
Mm-hmm. Men's gymnastics is sort of fading away, and that's been dropped a lot. And there's a hot debate on what that is, and there's making it a more, like, I would say in general, you want to make college sports and college athletics worthwhile for colleges and their departments to keep around. And also, like, fan friendly. Does it inspire, you know, a good crowd, a good following, people who follow the university because of that? I cannot speak to men's gymnastics because I got nothing, but I will say that women's gymnastics has really made a push in the last 10 years or so to be as fan friendly as possible, right? So we create our meet schedules and our meet timelines and how they're run in a way that is, like, good for audiences on television, good for audiences in person, and we've really stepped up our game in that. So women's gymnastics at the Division I level is a very well-watched and followed sport, and that's new in the last few years, but it's not an accident, right? Like, it's a very conscious effort of the people who love gymnastics and who are at the top to keep this sport moving forward and current, and to keep us all involved with that.
Wondering about physical health. Gymnastics has to take a heck of a physical toll. How do you avoid injuries or the long-term physical effects?
Well, this is a good time to shout out our head athletic trainer, Suze. She keeps us intact. She keeps us in line. She keeps us put together with tape and therapy. So we have each of our athletes comes in and they do a pretty extensive, like, medical rundown and physical rundown and check through, both yearly, and their first one, like their freshman year, is huge. And we kind of look at where the discrepancies are in their strength and their past injury history. And then they each have a personalized plan. We call it rehab, but some of it's also prehabilitation. Like, we can see this injury coming down the road for the way your legs are built, so we're going to, like, pre-strengthen on this. So they have to do that. Anna, do you want to talk about what that looks like on your end a little bit? Because I think my end, I have to let it happen. I have to support the right people, and I have to encourage the athletes to do it. But on their end is where the work really happens for taking care of their bodies.
Yeah.
So, I mean, with the rehab and the prehab stuff, that's super important. And for a lot of us, it's coming in 30 minutes early to get, you know, do our prehab and get taped, and then staying 30 minutes after to ice and do like that kind of stuff. But it's also playing it's smart. So your body can only take so much. And so when you're getting towards the end of the season, it's kind of like, all right, you know, this, my body's getting a little sore, but we have 2 weeks left. And so let's just push through that. And so now as we're in postseason, we get to be more conscious of that and like focus on that healing for next season and, you know, eating right and getting enough sleep and drinking your water. And we talk a lot about being an athlete 24 hours, you know, we're in the gym 3 hours a day, but those other 21 hours, if you don't act like you're an athlete, those 3 hours in the gym aren't going to count very much. So it's a 24-hour athlete.
Yeah. And I was going to ask about nutrition. Do you guys, Coach Wheeler, do you guys do some educating on that? I mean, there aren't team meals, you know, like there is maybe in the Division I level. So how do you educate in that area?
I was about to mention that when we were talking about the difference between D1 and D3. The other thing that is an underrated thing that these athletes do is they feed themselves, which sounds like standard because everybody eats, but a gymnast can't just eat like, I mean, they really want to eat things that fuel their body and help it repair and replenish and like reload the cells and reload the muscles and stuff for the next day, the next practice, right? And so we do work with them on nutrition. We brought in our school nutritionist, and she has a like pretty extensive sports background. So she's come in and I will kind of work with her on topics that we need, like during practice. So if you have a 3 hour practice, it's pretty well known that your body needs to refuel at some point in those three and a half hours.
Sure.
Because it like you decline in energy, right? And that's where injuries happen, and you're just like breaking down muscle with no chance to build it back up. So she talks about things like pre-practice nutrition, during practice nutrition, post-workout nutrition, and then just general like vitamins and things that we need. Really looking at that like 18 to 22 year old female athlete body and the extra needs it might have for nutrients and just care. So we talk about a lot of that, and it's been a good opportunity for them to ask tons of questions. And she helps like with meal planning and with good snacks to sort of refuel and stuff like that. And I would say good snacks, I'm not saying like we don't have a foods you can eat list or a foods you can eat list. It's just these are the things that would help the most to refuel. And then you should also eat all the things that you like and make you happy. So we've done is it called the athlete's plate or something?
Mm-hmm.
Like the plate method, and look at that. So we work with them on that. We do snacks and meals during meets and competitions, and the rest of the time they feed themselves. And this team's done an incredible job meal prepping and buying into their nutrition and their snacking and all that, so that it's, you know, moving us all forward.
That sounds great. We had a listener email to ask if, does UW Stout have a club gymnastics program in addition to the competitive team? And maybe you could talk about the difference. Her daughter is a level 6 gymnast. I'm not sure what, you know, Anna, yeah. You're probably a level 1, but if that's the way it works, but just talk about that.
So the levels go the other way, actually. It starts at 1 and you build up to 10. But at Stout, we don't have a club team like at the collegiate level. We do run like community ed classes for people in the Menominee Chippewa Valley area. But as a college, we do not have a club gymnastics team, unfortunately.
Well, you're definitely not level 1. I take back everything I said. You're going in the other direction for sure. I like the idea though, the fact that you do go out and do some training and or do some performances or classes, I guess I should say, for folks in your area.
It's actually our fundraiser, I will add. So our college athletes coach the recreational classes, and then we bring in, you know, it's, we talk a lot about love of gymnastics and why they're here, but we bring in athletes from the area, they pay for the classes, and then our coaches volunteer their time. So add that to the list of things that D3 athletes do, is one night a week they coach 2 hours of gymnastics for free, and then that money goes to buying our equipment and helping us travel to nationals and stuff like that throughout the year. So, and our apparel and all that. But
yeah, I know my daughter's involved in some of that too. She's been her team has I know been in some food stands for the Bucks games in Milwaukee. So and of course that money all goes for the team, you know, their team. So it's great. Well, I think we talked a bit, we certainly talked about mental health. I mean, Simone Biles comes to mind as somebody who withdrew from a team final. She just mentally, she wasn't there. I think is what she said. That's not me. That's her saying, mentally, I'm just not there. But she's come back. But was there any effect, her decision affecting gymnastic and culture surrounding mental health? Did that have any impact as far as you were concerned, Coach Wheeler?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Simone, like she rewrote what it is to be a gymnast and what the physical limits are. And so when Simone says, hey, I'm fallible and I'm not perfect and I'm, you know, just human like you guys, we're all like, no way. We thought you were superhuman, you know? So I think just re-looking at that and how real it is, and it really brought to light the, you know, the individual sport we talked about before is really mentally taxing on people. And so you just got to be aware of that. You got to be in support of that and just kind of put the conversation out there, I think, regularly, and put the option out there. And some people would love to talk about it, be supported on it. We have like keywords in the gym. Like there's probably three different athletes in the gym. If they're having a certain type of day or they're really like struggling mental health wise, we just have like a code word. They tell me and I sort of know, you know, like this is not a day to push. This is not a day to like to do groundbreaking things. This is a day we're just surviving, you know? And some athletes want to really keep it separate. Like this is something I deal with outside of the gym. I don't want my coach involved in this. I don't want my parents. I just want to deal with like a therapist or myself or whatever they do. So I think, you know, what Simone did for the sport of gymnastics and mental health is she made it everybody's business, and everybody had to like sort of learn more about it and be more open to talking about it for the people who were willing to do that. And I wouldn't have it any other way. I think we're all better for it. What do you think,
Andrew? Yeah, Anna, and you were nodding in agreement there a bit. Talk about what you think.
Yeah, I mean, mental health is extremely important. I think of it as it's on the same level as how you take care of your body, and bringing in that 24-hour athlete. Like if your ankle's broken, you're not going to be able to compete. And if your mind's broken, you're not going to be able to compete. So taking care of that outside of the gym, and sometimes it gets brought into the gym, and working with your teammates and your coaches on how to work with that. And I love gymnastics, and we all love gymnastics, and it's a great place to be. And doing something you love is honestly one of the best things you can do for your mental health. And obviously the pressure of competing and that stuff can take a toll on it. But yeah, just being open about it and letting the conversation be a two-way street, and it's not something to be ashamed of or to hide from. And it needs to be talked about, and you take care of yourself physically, mentally, emotionally, and that's when you do your best gymnastics, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. And probably your best friends are among your best friends, I'm guessing, are your teammates. At least that's the case for my daughter.
Yeah, for sure. It's you spend so much time with your teammates. It's hard to not become best friends with them. Yeah.
Well, so what are your, so you're a sophomore.
Yep.
So I'm assuming you're setting your sights on All-American for junior year too.
That's the goal for sure. Yeah. I think there's a lot of stuff to get there. We really work on as a team, like setting our team goals, and next year we want to repeat a national appearance and work higher up in that placement and become more competitive with some of the other big names in D3 gymnastics. And with pushing that team envelope and becoming better as a team, that's the easiest way for me to become a higher performing individual. When you're surrounded by people who are continuously like pushing you for a lineup spot, you're continuously like getting better and better. And I like to focus on the team performance of it because the individual comes along with it.
Yeah. Coach Wheeler, you're agreeing?
Yeah. I mean, spot on. We talk about that a lot, and it's just when you will do something for your team, you will do a lot more, and it's a lot harder to let your team down than it is to let yourself down. You know what I mean? Like, you can kind of say, if you're on your own, you can just kind of be like, oh, I don't want to do that extra routine or that extra pass. But if you're looking at 20 people and you're taking a lineup spot from six of those who are like in the 7 through 12 depth chart, you want to do that pass, and you'll do it every time for your team. And so just, we use that team concept to really like push people and push the top. And Anna's right. She's going to, well, so Anna didn't compete on beam for us this year, but Anna trains beam and she works beam. And so she is a big part of the reason our beam, you know, ended so high and set the school record at the final meet, right? Because she's there and she's willing to take a spot and she's willing to do the work. And so it pushes the top to be even better. So I think, you know, we also had two All-Americans on beam this year, and I don't think they get to where they are without the Annas of the world and the Annas of the team pushing from behind. So we're just all going to, like, just grind and set our goals and set our team aspirations, and we're going to just work together to get our six highest scores at the end of the year. And if it's Anna, amazing. And then Anna's also, like, I mean, she's here and talking because I know that she stands behind this team concept that we're going for, because if it's not Anna and she's the seventh and she's our first alternate at nationals, she's going to be in there just screaming her face off, like cheering for her teammates and just all in. So she gets what we're doing. She gets how to be the best at it. And we just go team first and let the individual results take care of themselves. We're chasing the team title.
Anna in McHenry County, Illinois, emailed. Her sister was the head women's gymnastic coach at University of Pittsburgh for 30 years, almost 30. And Anne attended many of those meets over the years, and they were so much fun. All the girls' teammates would stand nearby for each other, loudly cheering on their teammates while competing on floor exercises. All the other girls on the team knew every routine and would mimic what was being performed on the floor. Great to watch those meets, and you're smiling because I'm both of you have experienced and are experiencing the same thing. And I want to thank you both for being with us today. Real pleasure, Anna, to meet you and talk with you. And Coach Wheeler, certainly you're doing a great job, obviously. And it's much appreciated. We're proud of you, and I hope we can talk again. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Anna Mielke is sophomore at UW Stout's gymnastics team, and obviously is not only a great athlete, but from the interview, a great person, as is Coach K.J. Wheeler, head coach at UW Stout's gymnastics team. Well, it was great to have them with us, and we'll do another show on gymnastics and maybe get them back. Maybe next year when Anna's a three-time All-American. There we go. Coming up, we're going to take a look at the Final Four for the men's and women's basketball teams. That's next. I'm Larry Mueller for Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks so much for joining us today on WPR. We are down to the Final Four of March Madness for both the men's and the women's basketball teams. Who do you think is going to win it all? Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today. We're talking college hoops today with our guest, Justice Cleveland. Great to have him back. He's sports director at WEAU-TV in Eau Claire. We've talked many times. It's great to have him back. As we talk with him, hope you'll join in. Are you watching this year's men's and women's tournaments? Which team do you have to win it all? What do you think about the up-and-coming stars of women's basketball? We're certainly going to talk about that today. And you can join in. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. And you know what? We'll probably try and get a comment or two in on the Brewers since this is their first home game of the season. I think about 3 o'clock today, isn't it, Justice?
Yep, 3 o'clock against the Twins.
Against the Twins. And Bob Uecker's back, 90 years old, and he'll be calling today's game. So that's cool. But let's talk Final Fours. Maybe start with the men's. We've got How is your bracket looking, by the way? Did you fill one out?
Yes. Oh, yeah. it's a rite, or you know, a rite of spring. I think you have to, even if most of the time it's thrown away after the first weekend. But yeah, this year I'm actually not doing too bad. I picked Purdue and UConn to go into the finals. I know Purdue, after some struggles in the tournament, was a tough pick, but right now I'm looking good, but we'll see what happens after, you know, coming up here in the Final Four.
Yeah, I had UConn on the one side, UConn winning it, but I had them playing Marquette for the national championship.
Yeah.
And I had Arizona.
There's some teams that I tend to stay away with, but I still, like Arizona, I've had bad luck anytime I pick them. But somehow I still do it. You're like, this is going to be the year. That's how it was with Purdue this year. It's like, you know, they struggled in those early rounds getting eliminated the last couple of years. It's like, okay, maybe this is, they're finally due. Kind of like when Virginia with Tony Bennett got eliminated as the one seed against a 16 and then came back and won the title the next year. That's kind of how I figured with Purdue this year.
Well, you know what? Purdue the last 2 years was eliminated by a double-digit team.
Yep.
And they could get eliminated by a double-digit team again this year.
Yeah, who would have thought? Who would have thought the run that you would see from NC State? I mean, it's, you know, harkens back obviously to the Jim Valvano team that made the run to the title. I mean, to come in playing in a tough conference and just run the table like they have to get a chance to even play Purdue is amazing. So they're, you know, all the pressure's on Purdue. You know that, because NC State, they're playing, you know, with house money, as they say. They're at this point, they didn't expect to even be this close to the Final Four to be in it. It's amazing. So yeah, it's going to be fun to see what they can do against a Purdue team and Zach Edey that, you know, just went off the last game with a 40-point performance.
Yeah, I think just thinking about it a bit, Purdue has a pretty good outside, you know, 3-point shooting team, but they don't rely on it as much. And I think the reason NC State got as far as it has is like Marquette, for example, which made like three trays the whole game when they're normally, you know, hitting about a dozen at least. And they were getting good shots. They just weren't making them.
Yeah. And I think you've seen that with basketball nowadays. I think with Purdue, yeah, they can move it inside with Zach Edey. But if you're not making 3-pointers in today's basketball, it's tough to win. It really is, because teams run so fast up and down the court there that if you're not hitting a three every once in a while, it's really easy to fall behind and not have a chance to get back. And I think, you know, with Wisconsin would be a good example of a team that really, if they're not hitting their 3-pointers, they struggled. And we saw that in the tournament.
So the NC State is 11 seed, and I think it's the lowest seed to make the final. There are other 11 seeds have made the obviously made the final four before. I think George Mason. I actually won some money on that that year. That was 2006. Loyola made it. UCLA made it as an 11 just a couple of years ago. And NC State.
VCU with Shaka, I believe. Shaka Smart's VCU team in 2011, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, 2011. So what's been the, as you think back to those, the secret of their success is just somebody got hot?
I think they're just one of those teams that was a late bloomer, that everybody just kind of started working well together late in the season. Again, they play in a tough conference, and you get games like, you know, a Virginia and throw those in there. I mean, they had a couple of three-game losing streaks thrown into the mix. And it's just like all of a sudden they got to the tournament and things just kind of just everything started to gel. And I think we kind of saw that. I alluded to how the Badgers played in the Big Ten tournament. You know, the potential's there the whole time. And you saw spurts of it during the season, but in the Big Ten tournament, you saw it all work together. Now, you know how easily that can fall apart.
Yes.
But for NC State, for them to maintain this, it's nothing more than, you know, it's amazing to see this in this day and age of basketball. But it also shows you that I think these teams aren't that far apart like they used to be. Like it used to be, if you were a one, you know, those 1 through 4 seeds, good luck getting past any of those teams. But now I think that in the changing landscape of college men's basketball and women's basketball, that these teams are all very, very close when you get that 1 through 64.
Yeah, that's for sure. And the women, on the women's side, those teams are getting better. And there's a lot of teams that you from the men's side, like South Carolina on the women's side, what are they, 32-0 or something?
36.
36?
Yeah.
Is it? I can't go any further without talking about Iowa for a minute and the LSU game last night. I don't know if you had a chance to see any of it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, that was to talk about the changing landscape for women's basketball. I mean, that was the front and center story of the night, was that LSU-Iowa game. And that just shows you just how much that sport keeps growing. And it's, for me, it's fun to watch. I think it's fun to watch this growth in a sport, and it's really starting to take over the national landscape. I mean, Caitlin Clark, I feel like women's basketball is having their Magic Johnson, Larry Bird moment, mm-hmm. where it had always been popular, but now it's taking a leap into the stratosphere. And really, I mean, for that game last night, I haven't seen the ratings, but I'm sure they were great for ESPN. I mean, that game was what everybody was talking about, and it'll keep going. I mean, the matchups are intriguing, and now you have Iowa versus UConn. UConn, the dynasty of women's basketball, and it maybe, you know, sparked what we're seeing now. Tennessee, you got to throw in there too with Pat Summitt, I think. But yeah, I mean, for the matchups that they've had, this has been a fun tournament to watch, and Caitlin Clark has been a lot of fun too. So has that LSU team that they got the victory over last night.
And Angel Reese on the LSU side. So there's another a player who is well known. And, you know, I don't think any woman basketball player is better known, I think, than Caitlin Clark right now. And she certainly earned last night an example of her ability, not only what she scored, 41 points.
Yeah.
And then, then she also had at least a dozen assists.
I mean, she can, the passes she makes. I mean, you think back to the days of like a Larry Bird or somebody like that, or Luka Doncic in the NBA, who could just pass it from anywhere. It, you know, they can be moving to the left and they just flip over the wrist. It's getting under the basket to somebody wide open. You have to be ready anytime for that ball to come to you from her. Then that's just amazing. And then she could shoot it from anywhere. I mean, anywhere she walks past half court, she could launch at any moment. So, I mean, how do you defend that? You try your best. And she came up and showed that she's doing what big stars do in those moments.
Well, and she was guarded by somebody who was a little shorter than her, which I think I'd have put they switched around later, but it was kind of getting to be too late when before they got some taller players on her to kind of block her.
Yeah.
At least get their hand at her face, but it's pretty hard to even get your hand at her face when she just kind of strolls across the half line and or races across the half line and shoots from there, like right. Two steps in.
Yeah, and if she pump fakes, then she just cuts to the basket, go behind her back like she did there in the, I think it was like the second quarter. I mean, that's just how amazing she is, and it's been a lot of fun to watch.
It has indeed. Justice Cleveland, our guest today, sports director at WEAU-TV in Eau Claire. Always great to have him with us to talk sports. We're talking the men's and women's Final Four. Wondering what your thoughts are. Maybe NIL will come into play here. I'm sure we need to talk about that a little bit. And player movement. That's another thing that we need to talk about with Justice. And we'll probably get to the Brewers, too. If you want to throw something in on the Brewers, you can do that, too. We'll take a quick look at the news, and then we'll be back with Justice. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR. Stay with us. Great to have you along today on Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. We're talking a bit of college basketball and March Madness and filling us in on his version of March Madness is Justice Cleveland, the sports editor of WEAU-TV in Eau Claire. Great to have him back. As we talk with Justice about the tournament, maybe, and we will get to the Brewers as well, I want to hear from you. Which team do you want to win it all? What are your questions about NIL, name, image, and likeness, and brand deals in college basketball? If you're a Wisconsin or a Marquette fan, tell us what you think about your team's performance in the tournament. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. You can email us, too, and email is ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. There are some, you know, back to Purdue and North Carolina for a minute, the NC State, I should say. There is a kind of an interesting matchup, and Zach Edey and NC's DJ Burns Jr. is kind of like two different, what's your take on that battle or that matchup?
That's going to be a fun one.
Yeah.
DJ Burns, who he's listed at 6'9", 275, but man, he's getting interest from the NFL because of his size. So him against Edey, who's 7'4", 7'2", 7'4".
I mean, he's 7'4", I think.
Yeah. I mean, and just that height, you can't teach height. That's what they always say. And he's an example of that. And he's got a good touch around the hoop. So Burns is going to have to do whatever he can to, you know, shove him out of the way. I mean, that's what we've seen anybody has to do, is just try to keep him out from getting closer to the hoop. But, I mean, their offense runs through him, Zach Edey. He really does. So, that we'll see if that what ends up happening there.
It'll be really interesting. And NC State's got what is his name? D.I. Horn, I think it is.
D.J. Horn?
Or yes. D.J. Horn, yeah, who's a heck of a shooter.
Yeah, and I mean, that's part of that success is them kind of having that ability to go inside and out, kind of like Purdue. And then once, you know, you get hot from the around the perimeter there, it'll take you far. And we've seen that with NC State.
Yeah. Chaz in Madison has something for us. Hi, Chaz.
Hi, Larry.
What's on your mind today?
I just wanted to give a shout out to the Wisconsin women's basketball team who just lost to St. Louis in the Grade 8 of the NIT. We're kind of accustomed to postseason success here, but usually on the men's side, so it was fun to see the women picking up the torch this year.
Yeah, I would agree with that, and you were nodding in agreement too, Justice.
Yeah, I mean, that's a team that you saw, we were talking in the last segment about a team kind of figuring it out as the season went on. And we really saw that team really start to figure it out and to get the WNIT a bid and then make the most of it, you know, almost get the victory over St. Louis Billikens yesterday there in the Grade 8. It's a good way to finish out the season. I mean, it gives you a lot of momentum heading towards next year to make those runs. And that's why it's kind of interesting that, you know, you saw some of those men's team decline the NIT invitation. Well, we're seeing with like the Wisconsin women's team what that invitation can do and what kind of momentum that can build for the next season. More games is always big, and I think that was very important for the Badgers this year and it to find some success there in the postseason.
I would agree, and I am very optimistic about the Lady Badgers. You know, they lost that game last night, but they lost their best player, their center, 53 seconds into the game.
Right. Yeah.
And then they lost their second, leading scorer. They lost at about the 4-minute mark, and yet they were still, they had a lead with a one-point lead with about a minute and a half to go.
Yeah, it was a fun game to watch. It really was. It was just back and forth. And, you know, they had a chance there at the end and just couldn't kind of get over the mountain there in that final minute. But still, yeah, to battle losing those two players and still have a chance to win just speaks, you know, of how much that team has grown during the season.
Yeah, all props to the team and the coach who is doing a really, really good job, I think. Well, you know, another coach that's been doing a good job is Shaka Smart. For Marquette, let's talk about, I mean, they made the Sweet 16. It's an improvement over last year, but the program wasn't moribund, but it was, I mean, Shaka Smart is taking it to a little bit different level, I think.
I think so. You know, they had the success there, you know, around 2010, you know, with the Buzz Williams teams, and then had some years of struggle, and then Shaka came in and it was like immediate, like just maybe a change of attitude. It just kind of seemed like everything kind of switched on when he got there. And that just maybe speaks to just his personality and the way he coaches that guys bought in right away. And every year that they've made the tournament since he started, they've made the tournament, they've gotten a step closer to the championship game. So for them, you know, keep this, you know, stretch going and keep improving every year. And it just speaks volumes to what Shaka has done with the program.
You know, the big thing I think with this is NIL. I'm and the amount of money that is out there and players moving from one school to the next is it's my, you know, for an older guy like me, it's kind of head scratching. And I think it's head-scratching for a lot of coaches, too. I mean, what do you think?
I think so. I mean, if you look at the transfer portal and NIL together have changed the landscape for both, you know, college basketball and football. On the basketball side, for sure, I mean, you have guys who will play with four different teams, five, you know, in their career. You know, possibly, you know, A.J. Storr. He's already on his second team, and if he comes back and doesn't get drafted, there's a potential that A.J. Storr goes to a third team for this next year if he doesn't come back to the Badgers. So it is a different world. It has kind of changed the landscape, especially for, say, John Calipari in Kentucky, where that was the one-and-done school. That was what, you know, it was almost you could guarantee that there was a lot of one-and-done. Well, that doesn't guarantee success anymore because – these other teams can go out and get these veteran players now. And it's weird saying veteran players when you're talking about college sports, but that's really what it is. You'll have these seniors now that'll be available to go to these teams. And in a way, it's even the playing field. But I'm sure for coaches, it's just maddening. Just not knowing what you're, you know, you might have a different slate every year. At least, you know, you could have half your guys leave. As soon as that transfer portal opens up, and I get notifications, you know, I'm you know, going on social media and go to these different sites. It's amazing the amount of players that are, you know, as soon as the season's over, hop into that portal. So everybody's looking for that perfect fit. So I don't know how you navigate that as a coach. You've got to have so much help, and that's what they do. I mean, they obviously have help with recruiting because there's so many options out there now.
And the amount of money that's out there now, I mean Caitlin Clark is at about $3 million.
Yeah.
right now. Angel Reese, you know, I was trying to from LSU is trying to make up her mind whether to stay in school or go to the pros. Well, she's making more money in college than she probably would at the pros.
Yeah, and it's a different world. I mean, you were talking like this isn't something we would have even imagined. You know, even 10 years ago, this wasn't imaginable. But now, it with the ability to go out there and get sponsorships to sell products, it kind of harkens back to maybe when the Olympics kind of opened that up. Because there was a time when you couldn't be an amateur and still you really couldn't have many, you know, endorsements when you were an amateur athlete. Well, that's kind of changed now with the Olympics for sure. and it has changed in college sports too. You know, you wouldn't see anybody on commercials that was in college sports. And now you're seeing it all over. So it's a tough line that the NCAA has to, you know, kind of straddle here between what amateurism and professionalism. And it's very murky. And I for one can't, you know, I don't know where it's going to end up at this point, especially more on the football side. It feels like it's heading towards something completely different than what we've been seeing.
There's so much confusion, and this is confusion even within the coaching ranks as to how this, what are the boundaries here?
Yeah.
On this. I mean, can a university just, or can a athletic department just pay somebody, $1 million to come? Or,
yeah.
Or do they say, well, we have an NIL deal for you that will bring you $1 million?
I mean, it's almost like teams having salary cap managers, you know, for professional sports. It's gotten to that point where like the amount of money now that's involved in college sports, I don't know where it's headed. And that's the tough thing. And I don't know if the NCAA really knows what's the end point of all this. There's still court cases out there to be decided. So it really is just it's a new world when it comes to college athletes and especially with that money that's floating out there.
Tim in Madison emailed that NIL is not good for college sports, in his opinion, just like the Olympic Games were meant for and should be amateur events, should be. The college sports should be for student athletes. Many already get scholarships, but NIL payments take college sports into a new level on the road to professionals and have the possibility of ruining what we had with athletics now, athletes now transferring every year in the portal and going where they get the larger payments.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with them with that point. Is that you don't know what's going to happen and what the road's going to lead to. And it's tough because I can see the student athletes' argument though as well of these schools are making money off of my image, which they were before, and they wanted to. I think if the NCAA hadn't fought it for so long, would we be where we're at now? Or would it have been, okay, they can get this money, they can go make commercials and stuff like that. If that would have happened 20 years ago, I don't know. But it is tough because I don't know if true amateurism in college or is there anymore. And I don't know if it can be there anymore with the amount of money out there, especially for the high star profile athletes. There's so much. If you're an athlete and somebody's offering you this to do an endorsement for a product, it's hard not probably to say no to that, especially if you're in college. So,
yeah,
it really is. I mean, you hear the word slippery slope, and I think that's what now the NCAA is on.
And I'm pretty sure that Storr, for example, he will, if he doesn't go into the pros, he's probably going to go to the highest NIL deal that he can get.
Well, he's gonna,
blame him, I guess.
No, exactly. I mean, he's gonna look for what team is probably gonna have the best shot of being successful next year, what's a fit, and yeah, if that's out there on the table, yeah, like you said, it's hard to blame these guys for doing it.
So, who do you think is going to win the women's? Do you think it's who are the final two, and who do you think wins? We have, and I should go back and say that we have South Carolina playing North Carolina State. So you got two states right there. I wonder if how much competition exists between those two states on a whole lot of things. But and then you've got UConn and Iowa.
I think it's that UConn-Iowa game is going to be a fun one to watch. So will the North Carolina State and South Carolina. But I think that UConn-Iowa, because of the storylines, Paige Buchers coming from Minnesota to be one of the highest. She was Caitlin Clark before Caitlin Clark was at Iowa. So I think you have that matchup. You have Gino Auriemma, who's, beat everybody at some point in his career. So that's going to be a great matchup. Then, you have North Carolina State and South Carolina. South Carolina's undefeated. And almost overshadowed in a way by a lot of these teams in the tournament so far. So I think they have that kind of chip on their shoulder too. And who would have picked the fact that we have North Carolina State and UConn both in both the men's and women's Final Four?
That happens almost never, or maybe never. I don't know.
Only with UConn, because UConn women are almost there anytime. So anytime the men's teams had success, the women's team was usually there as well. But yeah, for North Carolina State, if you would have, I don't know if that, what a Vegas odds would have been on both those teams being the Final Four, but they had to be high.
Well, and I think it is a first that there are two teams or two states or put it with both the men and the women in the same Final Four. I think that is a first.
Yeah, so you got to imagine just the excitement at both those campuses coming into this weekend. There's going to be a lot of nervous fans for both those teams.
Yeah, and I think if Caitlin Clark's the rest of her team, two other teammates, one scored 21 and one scored 18. I mean, she's getting plenty of support. So yeah. I think they've got a good chance to beat South Carolina.
I mean, that would be I think if you're looking for the best player, the all-time leading scorer to go out as a champion, I mean, it's hard to bet against Iowa if you look at just the way things have been going. But, yeah, South Carolina, I think it's Iowa, South Carolina, but never count out Gino Auriemma for finding a way to get to the title game.
He's had some injuries. He's got some players that aren't playing. I was amazed that his team won last night because there were – I think at least two starters that weren't able to play because they were injured.
And they were down early, too. So yeah.
They were down early. Well, and then I think UConn is going to win the men. It's hard to imagine that not happening the way they play.
I picked Purdue, but...
yeah. Well,
hopefully Badger fans can forgive me for that one.
They held Illinois to no points. They scored 30 straight points on Illinois, which is a really good team. I had friends who had them picked in the Final Four for sure. So I did want to mention the Brewers because this is their home opener. What a day for a home opener, but hey, there's a cover on the field.
Exactly.
So really exciting bunch, I think, of young talent on the team this year.
Oh, it really is. I got an opportunity to go down to spring training a couple weeks ago. And I mean, the lineup was, you have your Yelichs and Contreras's, but most of those players are under 25. A lot of the spring training guys I got to see were under 20. I mean, you got Churio coming out, the highest paid minor leaguer ever. And he's been looking good so far in the lineup, and they have a lot of guys in that farm system that are really young and talented too. So I think it's going to be very similar to how the Packers were this season, where the expectations weren't really there, but you got a lot of young talent that I think is going to make it exciting.
And of course it'll be pitching will be the kind of the big thing for success or not success of the team. They're going to have to score a lot more runs this year than they did in the past. Last year, if they're going to win as many games as they won last year, which I sure hope so. And I've watched two of the games. I didn't go to the games, but I watched two of the games. And Reese Hoskins, what a player! There's a veteran that brings some feistiness to the team, and I think is a really great addition.
Yeah, because he had the questions. He didn't play last year, so you didn't know what you were going to get. But in spring training, I think he showed that he's back health-wise, and he was hitting home runs in spring training. He's got one already this year. And, yeah, like playing with a feistiness. I don't even think the slide into second was dirty that the Mets player thought was. But, yeah, you already, you know, two games in, they had the bench coming out. So, baseball season's here, and they seem like they're in mid-season form. And, yeah, I think it'll be fun. And you mentioned the pitching. I mean, it was nice to see Freddie Peralta come out there in that first game and you know, go six innings, give up one hit, and basically match what Corbin Burns did for the Orioles. Yeah. On his opening day start. So it gave, he's like, okay, all the ace for the Brewers did the same thing that their ace from last year did for a different team. So it's just the depth will be a little bit different this year for the Brewers pitching wise.
And this first home game, Bob Uecker's calling it. He turned 90 years old in February. Have you ever met Bob?
I have. I've had the opportunity a few times just, you know, going to games and saying hi, shaking hands, nothing too much, but just listening to him when he's just talking with people. I mean, the man can tell a story, you know, at a drop of a pin. He's got 15 stories ready to go about anything. So he's always been one of my heroes in sportscasting, just, you know, having grown up listening to him. So, yeah, we are fortunate and it's so great to have him on the mic for opening day here. And hopefully, you know, let's get the Brewers get to the World Series and this season. And let's see what happens.
When, you know, when the Brewers were not very good and losing, if they were way behind in a game, I loved listening to Uecker.
Oh, yeah. That was the best. Because,
that was the best.
He would just, you know, he would go on the stories. In between stories, and there's a strike, and then he would go back to the story, and he's out at third base, and you know, he would throw in what was happening, but it was just almost so nonchalant because they'd be down 11-1 or something like that, and it wasn't going to get in the way of the story. So, but he kept you informed. But that's Bob Uecker. I mean, he is a legend, and we have been truly blessed to have him behind the mic for as long as we have.
I can remember so much say, oh, I got to listen. I got to keep listening because Uecker is, you know, an 11-1 game. That was the most fun game to listen to him talk because he would come up with story out of where are they out of his, he pulls them out of his hat for.
Well, and I think when Tommy Lasorda sometimes would come and visit the booth or he would have somebody that, you know, was a contemporary that played at that same time, then the stories would really, really flowing. It's such a fine line of, it's so amazing that, you know, to be able to be a play-by-play guy, but being a storyteller, especially in baseball, I think is a really big part of it.
Yeah. Well, on that note, Justice, thank you so much. We'll be I'll root for Purdue for you to win this so you can win here.
Thank you.
Justice Cleveland is sports director of WEAU-TV in Eau Claire. Great to have him with us. So hopefully he'll come back and do this again with us. And it was fun talking. I'm sorry we didn't get to all the phone calls here today. Tomorrow, Jamie Nack and David Drake are back with another wildlife roundup, and we'll talk about baby animals, wild animals, and answer your wildlife questions. That's tomorrow at 11. Thanks for listening, and please stay with us. Lots in store on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller.